So this is Jonathan Grimes, and I'm here with composer Raymond Dean. Raymond, your work is being performed in the Purcell Room on the 29th of March, just next month. How did this concert come about?
Well, it was a suggestion from the musicians, the Fidelio Trio, particularly the violinist Darrell Morgan, suggested that we should do a gig together in London, somewhere or other, and various venues were put forward, and the Purcell Room caught my attention, because I can remember when it was opened donkeys years ago, and I just got this bee in my bonnet that that's where I wanted this concert to take place. And in fact, it could have taken place a year ago had I opted for one of the other venues, but Purcell Room it is. I think it's a very prestigious venue in the South Bank Centre, and I think it's a good place.
And how important is it for you as a composer to have your work performed abroad in a venue such as the Purcell Room?
Well, in principle it's very important, obviously, but it's not something I've devoted a great deal of my attention to down the years, which is probably why when the idea was mooted to me, nothing could stop me from going ahead with it. I mean, the whole question of marketing, disseminating your work, it's not just a side issue for a composer. You don't write for the drawer, you write to get your work out there, you write for other people. And if your work isn't disseminated, you might as well not be writing it. Well, it may give you some personal satisfaction or dissatisfaction, but it's important to get it out there, and it's important not just to be caged in your own little island. So yes, I'm quite looking forward to this.
And you mentioned the Fidelio Trio and violinist Darrell Morgan, and the fact that you've worked previously with both Dara and the Fidelio Trio. Presumably these prior connections are very important for you as a composer when it comes to working on this sort of project.
Well, they're vital. In this particular case, I probably wouldn't have got my act together to do anything of the sort, and nobody else is going to come just out of the goodness of their heart and say, oh, there's this great Irish composer, let's propose a concert of his work. So yeah, there's no doubt about it, having some personal links to people. In the case of Darrell Morgan, I think the first ever award he got as a violinist here in Ireland, I think it was in the Festival, was actually playing one of my pieces, which he is playing in this concert as well. That's the epilogue from 1973. It was he made the arrangement in effect for violin and piano of what was originally a flute piece.
And the two piano works on the programme, After Piece One, which I think was the one on our very early CD.
That's correct,
CD.
Yes.
And then Rahu's Rans, they're quite different works, aren't they? Obviously the After Piece One is quite a short piece, and then the Rahu's Rans is a major piano work.
Both major.
Okay. I suppose what I'm trying to get at is you know, what led you to choose those two pieces on the program?
Well, it was more a question of what pieces Mary DeLee, who's a wonderful pianist, wanted to play. So there were three possibilities. There were those two, and there was another much earlier piece called Linos 1. We settled on these pieces eventually. I haven't heard Mary play Rahu's Rounds, which is extremely difficult. But I've been told that she plays it extraordinarily well, so I'm really looking forward to that. The difference between, well, I think all my pieces are different, because I always sit down with each piece that I write and try and approach it as though it were the first piece I'd ever written. But the first one, the After Piece One, 1989, I wrote for myself to play. And I can just about play it. Sort of 20 years later, I've kind of mastered it. A little bit. I always started out to write these things that would be fairly easy for me to play, and ended up writing something much more difficult than I had anticipated. In the case of Rahu's Rounds, it was commissioned by Hugh Tinney, who is a better pianist than I could ever dream of being, and so I just let fly. I decided, okay, I was going to write a really technically very difficult piece, but I was also going to write a piece that I thought of as being the opposite of Hugh Tinney. Hugh is a very philosophical pianist. He's somebody who plays very reflectively. This is a piece that you can't reflect very much about because it's just held for leather for most of its duration. So the two pieces had completely different points of departure, and they ended up as very different pieces.
And in terms of your work at the moment, I mean, are you composing on a regular basis or on a continuous basis, or do you go for periods without composing anything at all?
Normally I go for fairly protracted periods without composing anything. It depends partly on what commissions are coming in, but it also has something to do with the fact that once I set down to work on something, I'm usually very fast, because I think a lot before I actually put anything down on paper. But as it happens, for the last 3 years I've been working on this full-length, fully scored opera that I've almost finished. So that has entailed pretty continuous composition, and of course other things have come in the meantime. I've had a couple of commissions in between. So it has been a fairly steady 3 years. I'm looking forward, when the opera is over, to spacing myself a bit more, but I may be forced to do so by the absence of commissions, who knows.
And the opera itself, what's the theme, or what's the idea behind it?
The opera, the text of which is being written by the playwright Gavin Kostick, we were kind of writing it in tandem. He didn't write the whole thing in advance, and then I set it to music. We do a scene at a time, and we discuss it, and we work out all kinds of different questions about what's happening. It's about the relationship between Mahler's widow, Alma, and the painter Oskar Kokoschka, who was considerably younger than her. They had a very passionate relationship a couple of years after Mahler died. Of course, she dumped him, as she did most other people, pretty quickly. And he then had a doll made in her image. And this is the central focus of the opera. The doll plays a very important role in sings and dances before being beheaded.
Small doll or life-size doll?
No, it's life-size. There are actually photographs of the doll that Oscar commissioned. It doesn't look remotely like Alma. It's quite a grotesque-looking thing. Apparently he was deeply shocked when it arrived in his door and the postman delivered it, so to speak. And that scene is also very central. And there's a knock on the door, and Oscar is so excited. Door opens, the parcel is delivered, the parcel is opened, and this thing flops out. I enjoyed writing that.
So opera is obviously something that's very close to your heart as a composer.
Well, it has become so. In fact, I had no interest in opera at all until well on into my 30s, with the exception of a couple of works like Berg's two operas and Schoenberg's Moses and Aaron, Ravel's L'Enfant et le Sortilège. A couple of others. You know, opera as such didn't bother me very much. You know, over the last 15 years or so, I've changed on that. I almost never go to the opera because I hate what producers and directors do with them. I prefer to listen to an opera and produce it in my head, so to speak, as I'm listening. But certainly since I started work on this, and in preparation for starting work on it, I really immersed myself in opera, particularly opera from around the period when these events were happening, the beginning of the 20th century, which is the part of musical history that's closest to me in a lot of ways. So I saturated myself in opera during that period. I've laid off since I started working on the piece, obviously, because, you know, too much interference coming from outside.
And as to a performance, there's none. It's in the balance at this point.
It's in the lap of the gods. The first scene to be composed, which is the third scene of the opera, is quite a long scene, was commissioned by RTE Lyric FM and has been recorded by soloists and orchestra. But apart from that, you know, just working on spec at this point, started, so might as well finish.
And in terms of, you know, you spend some time in Germany and France as well as Ireland, and I'm just interested to know, I mean, to what extent does place have a bearing on what you compose or how you compose, or does it have any bearing at all?
It does, not a kind of non-specific bearing. It's not so much place as the sense of, I'm going to be very pretentious and use a French word, the sense of dépaysement. It's a word that has no equivalent in any other language that I know. It just means the state of not being in your own country. It's a kind of alienation, and I find that extraordinarily productive. Or even not just not being in your own home. I used to go to the Tyrone Guthrie Centre in Monaghan a lot, a kind of artist's retreat, and again that sense of being away from your normal environment and dislocation, alienation, as I say, I find just makes the thought processes, it accelerates the thought processes and deepens them, I think, in some strange way. I find that I need to go away to work a lot. And then I do a lot of the donkey work here in Ireland, like putting it into the computer and orchestrating and putting it into the computer, that sort of thing.
But you're at your most productive when you're...
When I'm away from home.
Yeah. And the last interview you did with us with CMC was 7 years ago this month, in fact, which is hard to believe.
7 years.
And it was mostly where you talked about your work Sea Changes, which is on the Leaving Cert music syllabus, and that was one of the reasons. That was actually our first video interview that we ever did, because we'd rolled out our then new site, and we thought it was a good idea to sort of put these interviews together. But I mean, taking you back to 2003, do you think the issues facing new music then are much the same as they are now, or have they improved?
Well, certainly from the point of view of the performance, the commissioning, the dissemination of contemporary music in this country, I would say they've deteriorated drastically. I mean, in the 80s and 90s, I was very much involved in partly on a polemical level and partly on a practical level in trying to change the situation for Irish composers, trying to get greater dissemination of our work. A lot of things improved, I'm not saying because of my activities, because I certainly wasn't the only one pushing for this sort of thing. A lot of things improved. Recording schemes were set up, for example. It was taken for granted that touring musicians would include contemporary Irish works in their programmes, that sort of thing. All that is a thing of the past, you know. So we have really regressed, and in one sense we've regressed beyond the point that we were at back then, because people have kind of got so used to things being better that they just haven't noticed that things have got worse and they're not doing anything about it. So we're in music and in many other respects in life, we're at a very dark period, in my view.
And do you see any hope?
Me, I never see any hope anywhere. That's why I remain so of such a sunny disposition, because I'm never disappointed. The only hope is that people are going to go on doing what they do, and composers are going to go on composing, and eventually, I presume, the situation will change again, and in unpredictable ways, hopefully for the better.
Are you working on any, apart from the opera, which presumably is taking up a lot of your composing time, what other projects do you have in the pipeline?
Well, I've been thinking for some time and have jotted down some ideas for a new cycle of piano pieces. My first cycle, the after pieces, 69-70. The first cycle is the Orphic pieces. The second cycle, the after pieces, were exactly 20 years later. And it's now 20 years later, so I think it's time for another cycle. So I've got an idea for a cycle of much shorter pieces, maybe 12 kind of prelude length pieces that I would like to work on. But I need a bit of encouragement first.
And the piano is obviously an instrument that's quite important to you, and
yeah,
that it's your instrument. Do you play on a regular basis?
No, I'm afraid I don't. I used to. I don't play so much. I kind of got out of the habit of it. When I stopped playing the piano in public, and I did that because I heard other people like Hugh Tinney doing it so much better than I could hope to do it, I kind of stopped playing it in private as well. I still compose at the piano all the time. I mean, I don't compose away from the piano. Ideas come away from the piano sometimes, but the actual process of working them out, I really need that kind of material involvement at the piano. I use an electric piano with headphones most of the time, so that other people aren't driven nuts. But no, I don't. I keep saying to myself that I will get back and start playing the piano again, just for my own pleasure. But I don't know, some blockage there.